Hey guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And this is the Notorious Women Podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
Yes, yes.
We are back again, peeps.
That's right.
We're getting close to the election.
Yeah, we are. Are you freaking out?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have this sense of dread that I had about two weeks before. No, in 2016. Because in 2016, people were acting like what was happening was not happening. And I could see it. Like I told you, like I went to, a dinner. And I feel like Black people in general could be like, they gonna elect that motherfucker. And my good meaning white friends are like, no, it'd be fine. It'd be fine.
Lavetta went to a white people dinner party and she had to try to drop some truth.
And they're like, it's fine. It's like,
listen, I'm just going to vote for Jill Stein because I'm voting my heart. That is the whitest vote on the planet, by the way.
And by the way, Jill Stein's just been endorsed by David Duke.
Yes. Who runs the KKK? So tell me, my fellow progressives, how Jill Stein is in any possible way on this planet a good idea. Listen, you guys, I think sometimes people forget, but the KKK was bad. I know. What? But it was, though. Like, really? Okay.
Yeah. Like, it's just, yeah. My, it's so funny because he said in endorsing her, I had to pick the candidate who was good for white people. So.
Right. So, okay.
So that's why she thought there were over 600 people in the House of Representatives, because this bitch is on the take. So I never want to hear that bitch's name again.
Awful. Can I tell you that I fell for some shit? I like to admit when I fuck it up, so that the more people, like, I like to be an example. Like, you fucked it up. It's okay. We could talk about it. You can switch. You can fix it. So after the 2016 election, and we're all like panicking, right? We're like, what can we do as citizens with no power? And Jill Stein convinced me that if I gave her $5, she could overturn Wisconsin. And so I was like, Sal, I'm going to give her $5. And he was like, whatever. If that will stop you from crying for 12 minutes. So I want my $5 back. I want my $5 back. Bitch owes me $5. Okay.
Well, on that note, I think we should get started.
Okay. I gave $5 to the KKK, Lavetta.
So David Duke endorses. I get it. Mm-hmm, that's sane people's math. David Duke endorses Jill Stein. And you once gave Jill Stein $5. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So you gave $5 to the KKK.
To the KKK, yeah.
Okay.
That's the only conclusion I can come up with.
I love it. We've all made mistakes. Hey, listen. so my darling,
I didn't know. Okay, you didn't know. Am I first?
Yeah, because her hood was still on. So
it was, and I couldn't see through it, because white people do have blinders, and we all know that, right? It's true.
It's true. Like,
that's what happened. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me of that scene, and we'll get started in just a second. And what's the TV show that was a terrible movie, but then with Damon Lindelof, Regina King?
TV show that was a terrible movie.
But it was a great TV show. It was a great TV show, but a terrible movie.
227? Sorry. No. I mean, so
long
ago.
You know what
ago.
I'm talking about. It was on HBO. It won like all these Emmys. Now it's going to drive me crazy. It had Don Johnson in it.
If anyone was wondering if we scripted this part of the show or any part of the show, I think we've just proven that we do not. Because, awkward pause. Yeah. What is the show?
Watchmen.
Oh, my God. I love Watchmen.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm not crazy.
But I was going back. I was going back to the '80s. I was like,
no, I know it was a terrible. I mean, I'm not
yes,
a big.
Yes, it was a terrible movie, but a great TV show. Now I get it. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So but when she goes behind and she's going through his house and she finds the KKK.
Yes, I remember.
And you're
that
like,
scene.
What the fuck?
I'm like, oh shit!
Oh shit!
I
so
had
now
the
they
same
don't
exact
hide it.
Moment. When I gave Jill Stein $5. Okay.
So who's your notorious woman this week?
My notorious woman this week. Okay, you guys, shout out to my friend Mickey, who sent me this woman. And I was like, oh shit. She was like, I feel like this is, you know, up your alley. And I was like, oh yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you've heard of her. I hadn't until Mickey sent me her way, sent her my way. That's how you speak English. Got it. Jackie Mitchell.
Ooh, no, I don't know who that is. That's a good name, though.
So Jackie was born on August 29th, 1913, in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Her parents were Vern Wall Mitchell and Dr. Joseph Mitchell. So she learned to walk, right? She's like a baby. She's learning to walk. And her dad was like, okay, you're ready. Took her to a baseball diamond to show her the basics of the game. What? Aww. Okay. So this woman right here, we need to talk about her. So her next door neighbor was a man named Dazzy Vance. So if you're...
His name, I'm sorry, Dazzy? Yeah,
you heard me. Dazzy Vance. If you're 112 years old, you know this story already, and all of these people are like, oh my God, Dazzy Vance, yes. But if you're not 112 years old, Dazzy was a really amazing baseball player. Did a lot of great things, but was male, so we don't need to go into that. Got it. So they were neighbors, and he taught her, you know, some tricks. He showed her his drop ball, which is a type of pitch, and it's a type of breaking ball, which if you know baseball, you'll be like, oh, but if you don't know baseball, you can be like me and be like, whatever, sounds cool. Yeah. So when she was 17, so she was really good at baseball, like her whole life. So when she was 17, she began playing for a team called the Angolettes. Probably named after a man named Joe Angle is my guess. Because men are narcissists much of the time. And this was a women's team. Okay. And she went to a baseball training camp in Atlanta, Georgia. And she attracted the attention of Joe, who was the president of the Chattanooga Lookouts. Did I say that right? That's like a long Chattanooga Lookouts. I want to make sure that I pronounced correctly.
You say the Chattanooga Lookouts.
I want to say Lookouts. That's the problem. Chattanooga Lookouts. That's what sorry. So this team did a lot of publicity stunts and they were kind of known for it. And I don't know if you knew this as I started speaking, but Jackie is female. Mm-hmm. So, but also really, really good. So this is around the time of the Great Depression. And Joe was like, she's good and we need butts and seats. Yep. I bet you she's going to bring butts and seats. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, let's do this. So he signed her to the team, which I think is really interesting. This is my own, like, he didn't just say, hey, can I borrow you? He signed her, right? Okay. 1931, March 25th, 1931. She appeared in her first professional game on April 2nd. She became the second woman to play organized baseball. Lizzie Arlington was the first. I don't know her story, but I bet you it's interesting. And so here's what happened at that game. So the New York Yankees, you've heard of the New York Yankees. The reason this is like in my head, by the way, is that I'm just a real quick side note. My husband is from Ohio. And the Guardians are doing well. So in our house, like if he wants to watch whatever sports, I don't care. Like, go ahead. Cause I get my way something like 97% of the time. So like when he's like, we're watching a game, I'm like, you got it, baby. You know, cause I want to keep up my record of getting most of my stuff. And so we've been watching a lot of baseball because the Guardians are actually doing really well. So I was like, and so my husband, no disrespect to Yankee fans, but grew up in Ohio and will never like the Yankees. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So here's what happened.
Okay.
Yeah. I need everyone to know that. Okay. The Yankees and the Lookouts were scheduled to play an exhibition game in Chattanooga. This was an exhibition game. April 1st, 1931. The game had a rain delay, so the game actually happened on April 2nd. Now, the way the media advertised it was unsurprisingly obnoxious. Mm-hmm. They were basically like, this 17-year-old little girl is going to play against these big, strong men. One of the papers wrote in like Media Blitz, right? Wrote, quote, the curves won't be all on the ball.
When, oh, God.
Quote, pretty, end quote. They put it in quotes. Jackie Mitchell takes the mound. Okay. Okay. Y'all are assholes.
Why is pretty in quotes?
Fuck. She's a pretty girl. Okay. Jealous. Pretty and skilled. They don't like that about us. Okay. Another one said she quote, has a swell change of pace and swings a mean lipstick. All right.
Oh, God. Okay. The lady, okay. The girl player. They got a...
The girl player. Know. Like the players yeah. and the girl player. Right? Yeah. Okay. And she had posed with cameras like taking out a mirror and powdering her nose and like... Anyone who's ever seen the greatest movie of all time, A League of Their Own, remembers those scenes as well. That shit's real. Okay, so 17 years old, she's brought in to pitch during the first inning. Okay. Now, what happened was the starting pitcher, Clyde Barfoot, what a name, Clyde Barfoot.
Barfoot and Dazzy. Yeah. I just can't, these names are
great. I love it. Yeah, I know, love right? Let's go back to that, you know?
Yeah.
So he gave up a double and a single. So they put her in because they were like, we need a better pitcher, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I think happened. That sounded right to me. Okay. 4,000 people are in the stands, P.S. Wow. The next two batters are Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig.
No.
Okay. Yes. So after taking the ball, she swung. She missed at the next two pitches. Okay. Basically, she struck him out. Babe Ruth glared. He verbally abused the umpire before being led away by his teammate to sit and wait for another batting term. Right. So he was like, she struck him out. Okay. And the crowd roared. Okay. The crowd liked it. So this whole idea of like, no, we're only giving people with the people what they want and the people, they just want men. That's not fucking true.
It's true.
Just not fucking true. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Next up was Lou Gehrig. Okay. And then she struck him out. Like two in a row, bitches. Okay. After she walked the next player, the manager pulled her from the game. The Yankees did go to win. But here's the thing. History, from what I gather... Based on my research, which is hard to find, P.S. If someone knows more, please tell me.
Yeah.
History tried to rewrite it as they let her do that. They let the girl have her moment. My fucking asshole. Okay. No, they didn't.
No, they pulled her. What they did was they couldn't believe this happened. So then they pulled her out to make it appear like, oh, yeah, they were doing this girl a thing. No, they were just ashamed that. And also, they didn't want the Yankees to lose because it's an exhibition game. So the Yankees lose to some nobodies in the Midwest.
Nope. Not that the games are rigged, allegedly. Cool. All right. So the headline the next day in the new of the sports page of the New York Times, the headline, girl pitcher fans Ruth and Gehrig. Beside a photograph of her in her uniform. And the paper says, quote, the prospect grows gloomier for misogynists. End quote.
Oh.
So like this shit, okay, was real. Babe Ruth, okay, was quoted as saying, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you ready for it? All right.
I'm all ready for it, baby.
dad don't know what's going to happen if they begin to let women in baseball. Of course, they will never make good. Why? Because they are too delicate. It would kill them to play ball every day. Okay.
No, he means it would kill the men to be beat by a girl.
Yeah. He's crying his little baby tears because a girl is better than you, bitch.
You know, I love it also, the idea of, I mean, because, you know, the guy who hired her, it worked, because he was just like, it's a depression. Yeah. Listen, we need to separate people from the little bit of money that they got. So so it kind of reminds me, she was in on the joke. She knew it. Like, she's like, hey, I'm making money. I'm out here.
She's
but
she was signed on the team. Yeah.
Like, it reminds me of Edwina, the bodybuilder that you covered.
Yes.
Who was like, I'm going to wear little heels and,
yeah,
you know, I'm going to pick up my husband and, you know, it's
I'll
all about
cute.
Like, yeah, I'll be
because
cute.
I got to make a living.
Got to make a living.
You know, it's kind of like when I wear makeup for the theater. I don't want to. I'm lazy. Yeah,
it's the reason we wear bras and.
Yeah.
Shave our legs.
Yeah. I don't really do that anymore. I turned 40 and was like, fuck that. Oh. I'm done with that. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, I'm no disrespect to people who do. More power to you.
It's the reason that we shave our lady mustaches if we have them.
Okay. I would do that. I would do that. And when that comes in, and I'm sure it will any day now.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to shave. We're going to wax. We're going to burn. We got to do what we need to do. Okay.
Yeah.
I just feel like with beauty and women, total side note, you just have to pick your battles. Where are your specific battles? So I guess I don't knock, right?
This is why I wistfully wish I were born a lesbian, because who's attracted to like not femmes, because I just feel like whenever I see, you know, the masculine lesbian, I'm like, they look so comfortable because they don't give a fuck about what men think. Yeah. And they're just like, yeah, I'm gonna get laid regardless.
I will say this, I really like that style and I would go with that style. Yeah. You know, just because it was comfortable.
Yeah, it's just comfortable.
I mean, I still found a man. You know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I feel like, I mean, I was a tomboy, and I don't know if you were, but I was a tomboy growing up, and I loved it. And it wasn't like, it's because it was more comfortable to wear overalls and pants.
I literally never wore a dress unless we were going to temple, and my mother made me. And then I was so uncomfortable. I kept like pulling it up because I was, you know, I was like, ugh. And then I was like showing. My mother was like, stop it. You know,
be a young lady.
The mom slap. Yeah. The mom's lap. My mother did not beat me. Do not go to her.
No.
Do not at my mother. Okay.
It's just like, be a little lady. You're a little lady.
Exactly.
It's like, oh,
it's
like, oh. Yeah.
All right. So what happened to this woman who is better than both Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig? Oh. Mm-hmm. I said it. They voided her contract a few days after this happened. Yeah.
Because she won?
Yeah. What they said was that women were unfit to play baseball because it was, quote, too strenuous, end quote.
She literally proved that was not the case because she.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what's crazy about it.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is what a lot of marginalized people have to go through. It's like they tell you, oh, you're not good enough. Mm-hmm. And then when you prove that you are good enough, they still make excuses because the power lies in thinking that you're not good enough.
I mean, I think that's where sort of gaslighting, the idea of gaslighting, and women are the most susceptible group to it. The more marginalized you are, the more you're susceptible to it, I think, in general. But like, man, that's like since the beginning of time. Well, you're not strong enough. What?
Listen, yes, physically men are stronger than us, and you know, except our thigh muscles. Our thigh muscles are unmatched.
Yeah,
but,
stronger.
But the idea is that I think also that they realize that she didn't realize her place, right? So she,
yes,
she should have not won and embarrassed the men.
Exactly.
I bet you they were mad that she embarrassed these two superstar male baseball players.
Yeah, that's exactly what she did. Okay, so. What does she do after this? She continued to play professionally, and she was, okay, it's called barnstorming, mm-hmm. which is, I've never heard of this. It's a term that refers to sports teams and individual athletes who travel to various locations. You know what it is, small towns usually, and they stage exhibition games. So she traveled with a team called the House of David, which I've never heard of.
What is it? That sounds like a drag house. Like a drag name for a house.
It's not
the House of David.
But it does sound like that, right? So they were famous for their very long hair and very long beards. And so she would sometimes wear like a fake beard for publicity. Okay. So I read that the House of David, it was named for a religious colony in Michigan that sought to gather the lost tribes of Israel in advance of the millennium. Their tenets included celibacy, vegetarianism, and a devotion to physical fitness.
And they were playing baseball?
So it's like a cult, but one that played baseball.
What?
Like a cute little cult.
Can you imagine? And they all had long hair. All the men had long hair. Wow.
Right?
I would actually pay money even during the Depression to go and see that because you're just like.
I would too. Yeah. I'd be like, I bet you they were good. Now, it was popular and it spawned like spinoff teams. There was an all-black colored House of David. So, what? Yes. That was a quote. I read that. I say it's a quote because like what does that mean?
Did they come out with afros or like,
that's what I'm wondering. I mean, yeah, maybe. Okay. And how do you like, here's what I'm gonna say. You're looking for your descendants of the lost tribe. How are you gonna prove this? There's no 23 in me.
I have a feeling that probably none of those people were Jewish.
No. Oh, you know, one or two of the rebels.
One of them two had been hiding and pretending like they weren't Jewish.
Yes.
Like that's what was happening.
Yes. Cause that's what we did. But I also read, cause I'm reading this stuff and it's on the internet. I don't have a history degree, but they inspired what then became the Harlem Globetrotters.
Because, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, this yeah. sounds like, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
You mean the Black House of David team inspired what became the Globetrotters?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what makes sense to me.
I mean, the Globetrotters is when you watch them, you're like, you forget that they're like skilled basketball players. Because they're doing the tricks and then you forget.
My dad used to take us every so often to the Harlem Globetrotters. Those are the only basketball games that I really liked because it was funny.
Because they're fun,
I remember thinking like the joke is that they're doing a thing and the funny thing is that they miss and they make. And I remember being like, they have to make it. That's so much. And I remember telling that. I was like, they're better than professional teams.
Yep.
Hope they get paid better than professional teams.
Oh, I have no idea. But and you know what I mean?
Yeah. They should, right? Those tickets ain't free, you know?
No. And it's a fun thing, so.
So in 1937, she actually retired. So, she was 23 years old. And she was just getting over the fact that they're using her story in this chaotic story to begin with, as a sideshow, that with all this chaos and ridiculousness that the men at the House of David were, she was the more ridiculous because she was a woman. And so, they once asked her to pitch while riding a donkey. You know, she was like, you can fuck all the way off. Okay. No.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, she went to work for her father's optometry eyes. Mm-hmm. She went to work with eyes. Her father had an eyes business in Tennessee. Miriam can't speak today. She is sorry.
I get it.
Now, in 1943, the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League formed. Can I bitch about the fact that it was girls and not women now, or should I do that later? I'll do it later.
You can do it anytime.
We are the members of the All-American League. I love that movie so much. But she was still really, really mad. This was about 5 years later, and she was still 5-6 years later pissed, and she wouldn't come out of retirement. And then the Major League Baseball formally banned the signing of women to contracts on June 21st, 1952. And if we're wondering what happened, my solid guess is that that women's league showed the fucking world that mm-hmm. women could play baseball just as well as men. Okay. Yeah.
Now, and then after the war, after World War II in America, it became about like, well, we got to shore up the men's confidence.
Mm-hmm. They're pussy little, weak-willed, pathetic.
Yeah.
Weak. Little confidence. Oh, honey.
Also, it's to force women back into the kitchen.
Yeah.
Right?
The 50s. Because
during the war, they were like working. And so like,
yeah,
they got used to it and they liked it, making their own money.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did. Okay. The ban lasted, Lovetta, until 1992.
No.
Yeah. I thought we were already in a post-racial society at that point.
Women have been banned from Major League Baseball from the 50s through 1992?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you know what else is I find really interesting? Okay, my kids, so they're fighting for everyone's rights all the time. They're very aware. They're little activists. I don't know why, except I do. But randomly, not that my kid knew what I was prepping for today, there's suddenly like, was like, why don't girls play baseball? Why do they play softball? Like, is there a reason a girl can't hit a smaller ball? And it's like, you pose a very good question, child. There is not. And we're like, what? I was finally like, yeah, no. World hates women, baby.
I did not know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Carrie Skyler was drafted by the Chicago White Sox for the 1993 season. And that's what happened.
Mm.
Now, in 1982, Jackie was invited to throw out the ceremonial first pitch for the Chattanooga Lookout. Chattanooga Lookouts.
Mm. Yeah.
I did it on their season opening day. And then she died in Fort Oglethorpe, Georgia, on January 7th, 1987. She was buried in Forest Hill Cemetery in Chattanooga. Now,
did she ever marry?
I don't know anything else. I couldn't find anything about her life between, you know,
going back to work in optometry. And
I'm super hoping she was a lesbian who had like a lover.
I was going to say.
And no one asked any questions.
Yeah. Because the fact that they didn't, because they love to attach a woman to a man through marriage in those days. So.
And I'm sure that there's like protection of her, of her privacy. Persona, of her privacy on the internet. But I'm just like, girl, if you're listening up in heaven, I certainly hope you had like the hottest lover. The sexiest bedroom. Okay. That is my wish upon you.
Yes.
They actually made a musical of her life called Unbelievable. And it debuted in a staged reading in 2017. I don't think it went past that. And on May 27th, 2017, the Lookouts honored her with a limited edition bobblehead to the first 1,000 fans who entered the stadium. Now there's a sports thing called The Athletic. Betcha it's a magazine. I don't know. and sports writers Joe Posnansky, he must be someone important. I'm going to go with that. He has a 60 moment series, and he ranked her game against the Yankees as number 27 on the list of most memorable baseball moments. I feel like it should be number four, but okay. Yeah. I just want to say that there were all women teams as early as the 1860s, and they had traveling squads, and two of the squads were called the Blondes and the Brunettes, and people paid to watch them. But they had to play on their feminine wiles, what have you.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But they were playing baseball. Like, they could have gone to the burlesque club. These women wanted to play baseball.
Yeah, it's like the, like we were saying about the Globetrotters. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's fun and it's exhibition, but they're really skilled. Like,
really, really good. Yeah. Like, so, they're hilarious, but they're not starring in a comedy on Broadway. So maybe they're good at basketball.
But maybe I could see it from their point of view. They're like, no, I'm an athlete. Why do I have to dress it up like and be cutesy? Right.
Yeah.
Why can't I just play in a real team and like
play a game,
quote unquote real team? Yeah, and play a game without doing all this gimmick. It's a gimmick, you know. And so I also wonder, she must be one of the characters from a League of Their Own TV series.
I'm sure they
modeled one of the characters after her.
She was a little bit before that time of that show.
But I would imagine just creatively.
But
you kind of folded in her thing.
I would watch that movie all day.
Yeah. So, thank you for sharing Juanita with us.
Did you say Juanita? Because her name is Jackie.
What did I, this whole time I'm
I
like,
I don't even know.
I heard you say Jackie. Why did I think it was Juanita?
I don't know. I don't know. I am not your eardrums, or I would know.
And Juanita, I don't even think I know a Juanita.
I don't know a Juanita either.
Oh, is Juanita little Juan, little John in Spanish?
Are you asking Juanita? Me what something is in Spanish? It could answer
what
you.
What is happening? I promise I have not been drinking. I have not been drinking.
Y'all, we're recording on a Monday, and this is what happens when we
record. You know, it's the J.
It's the
J that got me.
Sure, that's the J. Don't worry, Lola. I get it. Laverne, listen, it's fine.
Hey, growing up, I really wish my name was Laverne.
Laverne
had L's
and Shirley,
on
I
all
get
my.
That. Yes, yeah. You would.
But totally. Oh my God, that's so funny. Oh, that's so funny.
All right, it's your turn.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you. Now, just so not Juanita, Jackie.
It's Jackie. Bill Jackie.
Jackie, that was a lovely story about Jackie.
Thank you.
She's a wonderful person, sounds like. She contributed to society.
She did.
So she would be a heroic notorious lady.
Oh, yes, she would be.
So my notorious woman this week is not heroic. She does some good things, though. So let's get into it.
Let's do it. Okay.
So my notorious woman this week is Daisy Douglas Barr. Do you know who that is?
No, but I love her name.
Okay. Yes, great name. Okay. Now, Daisy Douglas Barr was born Daisy Douglas Brushwiller in 1878.
Okay.
Even though some sources say that she was born in 1875, you know, it's...
Whatever.
It's after the Civil War, so yeah. She's born in Jonesboro, Indiana, to John R. Brushwiller and Sarah Douglas Brushwiller.
Okay.
Now, though she lived much... she was born in Jonesboro, Indiana. She lived much of her life in Muncie, Indiana.
Oh, okay.
And Indianapolis at different times. Now, she was raised in the Quaker faith. So, you know, Quakers are good, right? Quakers
like
are
Quakers,
yeah, we usually
love,
like Quakers.
Calm
yeah.
down. Yeah.
But she also had a gift for speaking. So only at 60, only at the age of 16 years old, she became an evangelist.
Oh.
And by all accounts, preaching her first sermon after she was, quote unquote, saved at a service conducted by a traveling evangelist.
Well, then.
Now, yeah. Like, so she got the calling.
I've seen this movie in several iterations. Go on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, she had a gift for the gab, a gift for speaking. So she was a natural from the start. And because she was a she was raised as a devout Quaker, she thought this was a sign from God that she had found her calling to preach.
I didn't realize that Quakers and evangelicals were in the same world.
They were not. But during this time, they were starting to converge. Because when I think of Quakers, I think of like, you know, like friends. Sort of. Yeah. Yeah. Friends, a.k.a. Quakers are often called friends. That's what they call each other.
I felt like Quakers were the place where the houses you go to if any minority of any sort needed to hide. They'd be like, right. That's fine. We have a basement for you.
Yeah, because they're Quaker, loving. You know? That's the image. And I think that is the teaching of the Quakers, at least, you know, probably pre-Civil War, like up into that's what we think of as Quakers, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, growing up, she had many influences on her views on religion and society, including as a member of her family's church, and also from a teacher, a woman by the name of Sally Winslow Stevens. She was a public school teacher who traveled around preaching and who also went to India as a missionary.
Oh, wow. I almost was like, oh, I know her. No, that's Family Matters. Okay.
Yeah. Winslow. I know. Now, she was also influenced by her mother, Sarah, who dedicated Daisy as a seventh child to the ministry. So these are very devout Quaker people. Okay. And so then she young Daisy finds her calling, and it's great. Now, she also attended both Methodist and Friends congregations, because for those of you who don't know, Quakers call themselves Friends, and they don't call them church services. They call them Friends congregations and getting together and that kind of thing. It's unclear how much formal education she had, but it's doubtful that she attended college. Because back then, a lot of times your education was based on how much of the Bible you read too. So obviously she could read enough to write sermons and that kind of thing. So she probably was considered pretty well educated, for a girl woman back in this time.
Right.
But by all accounts, she was still very, very bright. So whatever her education was, by age 17, she was found in the public record working as a clerk in a department store and living with a roommate. So just a young, you know, normal kind of young person. But her being so devout, the job didn't seem to deter her from the ministry. So she continued to minister and preach and that kind of thing. Now, on November 21st, 1893, she married a man by the name of Thomas Dean Barr.
Okay.
The couple would go on to have one son, Thomas Jr., in 1895, just 2 years later. Now, by 1896, so she's married. She's a married lady now. So by all accounts, Thomas, her husband, supported her calling, supported her. So by 1896, after their son was born, she was ordained a minister and began preaching more formally.
Okay.
So she was an excellent preacher. Like I said, she had the gift of gab. So she became very, very popular, which served her well because she also felt very strongly about one particular social issue.
Which was?
Temperance.
Temperance.
Temperance, that old, like, no drinking. Drinking leads to terrible things in the family and that kind of thing.
The devil. Go on.
She's not wrong, but, you know.
I mean, it's problematic. I agree.
Yeah, because I feel
but
like
also,
people...
also, when you... It's like teaching abstinence. Ain't no better way to get a teenage pregnant than teaching abstinence. Okay.
Exactly. So, now, her charisma and speaking abilities were so profound that she would often attract as many as 1,600 people to a single meeting.
Wow.
So, she began to travel around the states and speak at various forums against alcohol. And she also, so because she was such a popular and had such charisma, she was brought in to not only just teach there, but also speak on temperance because the temperance movement was huge.
Yeah.
And
it
for
was
those
big.
Of us, it was really, really big. And so she became a star on that circuit as well as for her preaching and that kind of thing.
Okay.
So basically she got involved with the Prohibition movement. So for those people who don't know. Now, she also preached for women's rights.
What?
The right to vote.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Get it.
From the pulpit. It was a rare thing to have a lady pastor and preaching all of these things. Now, according to some historians, she saw women's financial independence on men as one of the key problems with alcohol abuse. Because basically, you have to depend on your husband. So if your husband's a drunk and spending all your money on liquor, that's going to affect negatively affect family and the children.
I get it.
Of course,
get that.
Right?
Yeah.
So again, that was her big thing. So over the next decade, she would continue to preach in support of temperance and suffrage for women, which increased her public persona greatly. Okay. She began working with other prohibitionists and she also helped found and got involved with the Young Women's Christian Association in the city of Muncie, Indiana. Because of her hard work and that of many, many other prohibitionists, Lion Crusade, they kind of formed with a whole bunch of groups. And one of the major groups was a group called the Lion Crusade in Muncie.
Okay.
Because basically the prohibitionists were, they wanted temperance in the United States, but they started in their community pushing for these cities to become what they called dry, meaning no alcohol was served. So a wet county or a wet place is a place that serves alcohol. A dry place was a place that didn't serve alcohol, which they succeeded in 1914.
Legally. Yeah.
Legally. Right. Legally. There's always liquor around.
Yeah.
Now, so that was a huge success. During this time, she learned how to like organize, like basically become a community activist and a community activist in a lot of ways. So it was very successful in Muncie.
Okay.
So after this success in 1914, she reportedly needed a break, she said. So she entered a sanitarium in Madison, Tennessee.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, but now it does sound nice because I'm like, she must have been tired, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on back then. But then some people said it was kind of shady, like how she left and like if she had burned bridges because she was known to be a bit prickly as well.
Okay.
You know, one-on-one. So apparently in the evening paper, it was announced, a cryptic note was announced that Daisy Barr was accompanied on this trip by a nurse to Cincinnati, where another nurse from the institution escorted her the remainder of the way. And it didn't indicate the reason for the trip, but it said, quote, while Mrs. Barr's condition is improved, the physicians decided that a few weeks of rest and quiet were absolutely essential for her recovery, end quote.
All right.
So that wasn't uncommon, but I feel like it was like basically that their version of like, I'm going to rehab. Like if you say something
publicly,
you're like, I'm going to rehab to get better because I'm sick.
I need a mental break.
Yeah.
Really.
So after she was away from the public eye for a few weeks and then she came back and started to get to work. Now, the next few years are a bit hazy, so we're not really sure exactly what went. Because her time in Muncie with this whole, like, trying to make the place go dry was very well documented, all of her activities. But the next couple next couple years after that were not. But evidence does show that she went back to work with the Lion Crusade only for about a year after coming back.
Okay.
But after that, they parted ways. And then she traveled extensively on her own evangelical trips.
By herself.
So much so, like touring and preaching by herself versus with other prohibitionists and that kind
of
thing.
Got it. Okay.
So around this time, she began being called Mother. Mother Barr.
Okay.
Now, she's mentioned in the Indianapolis Star in 1916 in an article on pioneer women of Indiana. So, again, her state profile is being raised, like she's becoming popular. Now, she's already popular. She's a kind of household name in that area. Now, in 1917, the family relocated to Indianapolis because Thomas was employed as an examiner of the State Board of Accounts. And in the 1920s, Daisy Douglas Barr reemerged as a political and religious leader.
Okay. Have you seen the new Perry Mason?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Is this similar vibes?
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, Kathy Bates can do no wrong, but it's so funny because she was like, oh, I need a break. And it's like, what is she up there doing? Like, and it's like, I'm going to run for office. Right. So
she's
getting more political.
Okay.
And she eventually became the president of the Indiana War Mothers and was the first woman vice chair of the Republican Committee.
Okay. Let's see where this goes.
This all sounds amazing, right? She's against drunkenness and she's for the rights of women to vote.
Yeah, seems like.
But Daisy was hiding a secret, Miriam.
What was the secret? What was it?
You know, it probably wasn't a secret to her close friends and her family, but it was a secret to the press and a lot of people who were like followers and fans of hers. Because Daisy was in the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan. And I don't mean just a card-carrying member, because they did have card membership cards. Mm-hmm. She was heavily involved with the Ku Klux Klan.
I did wonder where the other shoe was going to drop, and it seems like here is now, where that is. Okay.
There was a time, people were ashamed of being associated with the Ku Klux Klan, unlike the present day.
Right.
But they would actually hide it back then, even though there were a lot of members, but they would hide it because it was seemed as like kind of white trashy-ish.
Yeah.
So for lack of a better word, it was considered
also,
like
mean, you know.
Yeah. But also it's like, you're out there wearing sheets and like, you know, just be normal racist and deny black people the ability to live where they want to live. Yeah. Why do you got to go and harass people? Like, it was considered basically kind of something that white trash
got involved
with.
Just be a normal racist and put it in our government to never allow black people to succeed.
Yeah.
Like just normal race. Yeah. I agree.
Now,
I agree.
You're probably asking yourself, a Quaker? Is a KKK member?
I'm a little confused. I'm a lot confused.
Right? Like,
but go on.
Because KKK, like, hang black people, Jewish people, and other non-white people, and they harass them and burn crosses.
A lot of Jews got hung from trees, too, by the way.
Yeah.
If you're like thinking you're safe. You're not. Nope.
And that's like, you're like Quaker, KKK. It don't seem to rhyme, right? Make it make sense, right? Basically, it didn't really quite fit. But at this time, like I was saying earlier, that Quakerism at that time was becoming more and more part of the evangelical Protestantism. So they were kind of convergent. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So many members like Daisy, whose family association with the Quakers was more of a recent family activity. So her parents, her family were not Quakers of like the kind that we think of like the Quakers were like anti-war abolitionists. Like
they were
like,
abolitionists.
No.
Yeah.
Like, so abolitionists, KKK members. So
can't be both.
Yeah. Okay. So, but also because Daisy's family, their Quakerism was more of a recent thing. So again, they're not like generation after generation Quakers. Because I think
we really like slave. Oh no, we're Quakers, but we really love slavery.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's, now her grandfather, George Douglas, was a Methodist minister. Her father, John, he joined the Society of Friends after service in the Civil War.
Okay.
So John might have been like, because Civil War is brutal. So he's like, maybe I need to find another way. Like, you know, fire and brimstone might not work for me.
Right.
So the Quakers seem a lot more just quiet and soft, you know.
Yeah. But then his daughter was born. So here we are.
Yeah. But this is where you got to be careful who you marry. Because some of this sounds like it was heavily her mother's influence. For some reason, but you know, but this is also the disease that is white supremacy. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So now, according to some historian, including Leonard Moore, even Richmond's large Quaker community, which was one of the oldest and most influential in the state, showed no special immunity to the Klan. So basically, the Klan was also actively courting white people, trying to get their numbers up. Mm-hmm. And so he said at the time of this, of Daisy Douglas Barr in 1920 something, about 7% of the Klan members were Quakers.
What? You can't do that.
Makes no sense.
Dude.
So one of the most significant leaders of the Klan in the Wabash area at this time was a woman by the name of Ira C. Dawes, pastor of the Wabash Friends Church and president of the local Rotary Club.
No, you can't do that. You have to pick a lane and drive in that lane.
These people are like, we're taking over. Now, Dawes in 1921, side note, she resigned in 1923. She resigned in 1923 to go to Texas to head the KKK's National Speakers Organization. Okay. So she was a pastor.
We're doubling down. Got it. Okay.
So in 1921, she was a pastor of a Quaker Friends organization. 2 years later, she go to Texas to head the KKK's National Speaker Series.
Wow.
Now, some other overlap with Daisy and or some things that might have appealed to her is that the Klan were also big into temperance. They were anti-liquor, anti-political corruption, anti-prostitution, and believed in nativism, basically hating of immigrants and non-Protestants.
Yeah, it was a lot of hate.
Yeah, but see, but also,
you know, drinking liquor is the worst thing you could do. Okay, KKK. Yeah. Okay.
Now, but also often the temperance movement was so often carried. It had a tinge of this, all this other bigoted points, bigoted signpost, if you will. And so that is why they started to mesh. But what was so frightening about this is that the Indiana Klan had enormous political power in the local and state governments. Not to mention that she always had a nativist strain. So even in her speeches and her sermons, even though, again, she's fighting like Quakerism is like, love everybody. Everybody's your friend.
Yeah.
She would say she also had compassion for foreign workers in the Muncie area, but it'd always be a tinge of like basically white purity.
Ugh. That's gross. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
It do.
Now, and some people say that she just ignored, and many people who joined the Klan at this time would just ignore the whole like history of racial violence, coercion, and intimidation, and downright but just murder.
The history of it or the actually happening right now of it? I mean,
they would turn a blind eye to it and said, oh, that's just a, you know how we say about cops, that's just a one bad apple, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now,
we say that about a lot of people these days, honestly.
Yeah. But I mean, Daisy, when it came to the KKK, Daisy was like, all that other stuff, that racial violence, that's not my problem. That's the Negro's problem. Okay.
Okay.
Call me when you see someone picking up a prostitute or drinking. Okay. They said, I ain't got no time for this. Now, after it came out that she was a member of the KKK, because it was a more proper time, people were rightfully horrified. And so had to resign from all of her posts, including the chair of the Republican committee.
Once she resigned, I'll definitely vote for her. Yeah, that's fine. Because she stepped down. So we're good now, right?
But after Daisy left that, she leaned more into, even more into the hate. Because in 1923, soon to be convicted rapist and murderer and grand dragon of the Indiana Klan's men's order, a man by the name of D.C. Stevenson. See, I can't even say his Klan man's name. D.C. Stevenson.
You can fuck up his name all day. It's fine. I don't care.
He chose Daisy Douglas Barr to become Imperial Empress of the Queens of the Golden Mask. Auxiliary of the powerful Indiana Klan. So basically, she became head of the women's clans. Women's organization.
Dragon, diamonds. What the fuck? Imperial, golden, motherfucking diamond in the rough. What? They're making shit up. Okay. Congratulations on your queenhood. All right.
So she became Imperial Empress and Queens of the Golden Mask of the Indiana chapter. Queens of the Golden Mask were absorbed officially into the women of the Ku Klux Klan.
Ah, excellent. We can
now
wear masks that are golden now instead of capes that are white. Okay.
Now, the Klan was very popular in Indiana and in America. It was very, very popular. Because keep in mind, this is after the Civil War. So white people are mad that they don't have slaves anymore. They're mad
they're really pissed
that they have to work for themselves. They're mad, right?
Yeah.
So it's estimated that in Indiana, there were between 250 and 500,000 men members of the KKK.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
That's not a again, state we should go in. Let's just yeah. never go to that state.
No. Mm-mm. So again, so now she done joined up with the Ku Klux Klan in Indiana. So in 1923, so let's get into the logistics. So as her time with the KKK, she signed a contract with the Klan to organize Indiana, Kentucky, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, New Jersey, and Minnesota. Basically, it's recruiting. She's recruiting.
Okay.
So by the terms of the contract, she would receive $1 for each woman initiated as a member after July of 1923. The initiation fee was not hers, her sole reward, though, because she headed the women of the KKK in Indiana. She also received $4 for every member recruited. In return, she was supposed to act as the conduit for requests for robes that were sent to the national headquarters. This was an MLM, basically.
This is KKK's. An MLM.
Yeah.
A racist MLM. Okay.
So the sale of robes was a Klan monopoly that provided a considerable portion of the organization's funds.
Oh, my God.
So after being appointed, Daisy Douglas Barr plunged into her Klan activity. Now, remember, she had learned organizational skills from her time as a prohibitionist.
Yes.
Right? That had become successful with turning the city dry.
I almost forgot about that. Go on. Yep. She's on a journey. Okay.
So now, lest you think, oh, maybe she just didn't really know what was going on, even though she was like queen.
Oh, I don't think
whatever.
That at all.
No.
Yeah, no.
She was present, in Richmond when the Klan sponsored a nationalization ceremony, a march with 200 women. She also led a march of 300 Klanswomen through Kokomo.
Okay.
After a march where 400 women were initiated into the Klan, even though at that time she lamented that their robes were like, and their proper regalia was like ghetto and, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
She's like the bitch's bitch, you know?
Yeah.
She's like not just a bitch. She's like the bitchiest bitch. Okay.
But the crown jewel that year came in November when the Klan had its most important and largest parade in Wabash. So if you ever see pictures of the Klan, a bunch of them walking down the street, like, because they're back now in 2024, about 100 years later, it is, that's what she organized and that's what she was the head of over. Like, that's what she was overseeing.
So that was her.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Now,
people who don't like Hitler should probably also not like her. I'm just throwing that out there. You can't like one and not like the other. You can't do that. Okay.
So this Quaker Klan woman, I should put that on the Quakers. Now,
sorry,
her
Quakers.
Love affair,
that does suck for you, Quakers.
It does suck. Now, her love affair with the KKK would turn sour.
Oh,
because
no.
Because in 1924, another high-ranking Klanswoman filed a suit claiming that Daisy had, quote, amassed a fortune off the dues of Klansmen, end quote.
Oh.
She was accused of making money from selling the robes and other paraphernalia. She also was accused of not formally giving the organization their cut.
Okay.
Basically.
That is the worst thing she's done. I agree.
Yeah.
What?
Now, some people say that basically they fighting, the girls are fighting, is what queer folks would say, that this was like a political thing within the organization, like a move for power that other Klan's women were trying to take her down.
That sounds right.
So, yeah. So there was much slinging going back and forth. Like some people who were on the side of her, her nemesis were, newspaper reporter. So they were writing nasty things about her in the newspaper, and then she would plant her own stories about the people. So it just went back and forth. I don't really care because they're fucking racist women. Yeah. I don't really fucking care.
They're both assholes. Okay.
Yeah. But in the newspaper in June of 1924, filed by the women of the KKK in the Grant, Delaware Superior Court in Marion, it claimed that Daisy Douglas Barr had failed, like I said, to account for $100,000 she had obtained in fees from the Klan.
That's a lot of money.
According to the suit, Barr had naturalized, quote unquote, 5,000 members, had reported their entry into the Klan, but had failed to pay the Klan its dollar for each. An additional 40,000 members had been enrolled but not reported.
Okay.
So an investigation was opened, and in the end, they found, the Klan found that Daisy Douglas Barr owed them between $54,000 and $67,000.
Okay, I just want to point something out real quick.
Okay.
I just love that the government gets involved, that the courts are involved, and they're researching all of the things the KKK is doing, and their conclusion in this land of the free and home of the brave is that she owes them a lot of money. That's the conclusion. They're like, y'all, if you're wondering when marginalized people question our country's integrity, this is a fine example. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, for context, $100,000 in 1923 is about $1.8 million.
I am a lot of standards. Money.
That's a lot of money. So you can imagine the other Klan's women were peeved that she was making this kind of money. Because you know she was walking around in fur coats and you know, she was living it up. Now, to make things even more complicated for this terrible human being, in 1925, her mentor, Stevenson, was tried for and convicted of the abduction, rape, and murder of a woman by the name of Madge Obenholzer, a state education official.
Okay, so it's bad if they're white and they do these terrible things to them. But when they do terrible things to black people, which he was in charge of doing a lot of.
Yeah.
Like, right. But she's white, she's Christian. Now it's a problem. Okay.
Yeah, the man.
I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying he was in charge of a group of people that did this for funsies all the
that
time.
That had public hangings that, like, of black people just who had the audacity to, like, want a job.
Yeah.
Or to buy
a
home.
Walk across the street at the wrong time. Like
just,
listen, I just, like, because you said that and I was like, and then I was like, wait, absolutely unsurprised at all. Completely.
So
he ran a group of people that were like, let's destroy other people.
Well, I mean, a man who's over a violent organization abducts and kills a woman. My word. How is this possible? So
I didn't realize he was so violent. OK.
Again, because people were at least had the veneer of being decent. This horrified people. So that put further damage to the standing of the KKK nationally. Not the racism.
No.
But the murder of a white woman and
don't
the money
that.
going away, right? Because also it's like, oh, they're crooks, right?
Yeah.
So things are getting hot for our racist, bigoted Daisy Douglas Barr. So the following year, she was replaced in her leadership position as the head of the women's KKK.
Oh, no.
Who was, by the way, her replacement was a state official.
Of course it was. Elected. Because people love that shit. Okay, go on.
So Daisy packed up her Klan robe and other racist paraphernalia and with her tail between her legs and went away. She soon slipped out of public limelight in Indiana. Now, her husband by that time had become state banker commissioner, appointed to the same position by Governor Ed Jackson, who reputedly had Klan connections. So basically, she went back she left Indiana, but her husband remained in Indianapolis because he still had a job. So she left Indiana and went to Florida and apparently ran for Congress.
That sounds right.
In Florida in 1926.
Of course.
But soon returned because it failed. So now, after this, not much is reported on her activities in the newspaper. So she kept a low profile, even as she continued to use her incredible charisma and now knowledge, like I said, of how to conduct a racist Ponzi scheme. She was living her best life, I have a feeling. But not tragically, on April 3rd, 1938, Daisy Douglas Barr died of a broken neck, suffered in a car accident while riding to Indianapolis with a family friend by the name of William E. Ryder, a banker. She was just 60 years old and died the day before she was to serve as a hostess of a silver tea of the Meridian Women's Christian Temperance Union.
Wow. Listen, I feel like her death wasn't awful enough, but it feels pretty bad. Maybe, but like, I'm hoping like it cracked and then it was like slow, you know, slow demise.
Okay. Fannie Lou Hamer died at 59. That was way too soon because she was just getting her stride. Yeah. But she died probably from being worked, overworked, and tricked into picking cotton when she was six and had polio by a man who was probably a member of the KKK. So Miss Fannie Lou Hamer died of being tired. Daisy probably died in jewels and diamonds in a car accident.
At least she didn't live much longer than Fannie Lou Hamer. That gives me some hope for humanity.
Yeah. Or and karma, you know, that karma works.
That's
so.
Kind of what I mean. You know, like, oh, damn, bitch, you died in a car accident with your neck broke. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I like that her neck was broken.
I mean, it's a nod to all the necks of the black people who are hung from trees is broken. But, you know, it's so interesting. This is why I'm always suspicious of people who were super, super religious.
Yeah.
Because I always feel like it comes with a mean streak. Mm-hmm. And there's also mental gymnastics you can do. So you call yourself a religious, caring, God-fearing, kind person, all the things that are in the Bible about being tolerant and kind and accepting of others to join the KKK. But then not only does she get in the KKK, but then you start basically stealing money. I mean allegedly stealing money.
Sure. According to her family members can come at us.
Yeah.
You will make us so famous.
Now, you know
it's
what
fine.
I was thinking.
What?
Her last name is Barr. Who's another famous Barr?
I wondered that too.
I wonder if he's related. And if he is, that makes a lot of sense. His family has clan ties. Because she wasn't just a member of the clan. I can't stress that enough. She was like the leader of the clan's women's organization.
Well, they were really about temperance, Lovetta. Stop worrying about all the other parts of it. Okay. She just wanted temperance.
She just wanted temperance. Okay.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, so. I just want the economy to be better. So I'm going to fuck over everyone in this country. What?
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. I just.
And if you're... Yeah. This is going to come out, you know, close to Halloween, because I feel like her ties are terrifying and it's stuff that horror movies are made of. So that's why I chose Daisy Douglas Barr, Klanswoman. Okay. That is my notorious woman.
Your story today was so fascinating. I felt like I was on a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. Damn, this bitch was like a bitch, and then she was a bitch. She was like bitch, but let me hold my beer. I'm not done, bitch.
But also the other women, clans women who are like head of these organizations, you know, this is why they're trying to get on the school boards. They're trying to get head of the, you know, the PTA. Mm-hmm. They're trying to get head. Mm-hmm. There could be a bank presidents, whoever. Like they're all out there.
They are. So. We got to watch out for them.
So and be vigilant, people.
Be vigilant. Mm-hmm.
And remember to vote. So
fucking vote.
And keep a lookout for fucking Klans women. On that note, guys.
They're bad people. Okay.
They are bad people. Yeah. That wraps it up for the latest episode of Notorious Women. Remember to follow us on all the things, guys. Please also to leave us a 5-star review in the Apple Store. Yeah. And on not iHeartRadio.
All the other things, you guys.
All
Spotify,
the other things. Spotify. Mm-hmm. Please leave us a 5-star review. And like we always say, just copy the link and send it to your friends. If you think they'll like it, they want to hear a story about a Klans woman who gets a come up and send them this episode.
It's a satisfying ending. I'll say that.
I know, right? Just in time for Halloween. And Miriam, how else can they support? Oh, and also don't forget, we have a Patreon. If you want to support the show and send us some money, we promise not to embezzle it.
We
and
won't.
Put it back into the show and pay taxes, unlike Daisy Douglas Barr.
Yep.
You could do that at patreon.com/notoriouswomen. That's patreon.com/notoriouswomen. And Miriam, how else can they help the show?
All right, y'all. We have Instagram, Notorious Women Podcast. Please follow us there. Talk to us. I like to post a lot of things that go kind of with all of the stuff we talk about here. You can email us also at notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. You can also DM us at Instagram too. That's fine. And we're also on YouTube, by the way, if you guys want to listen.
Yeah.
If you like a podcast, we are there. Yeah.
Listen while you clean your house. You know, that kind of thing. So.
Right.
Or all right, guys,
know, get your husband to clean the house. You know, yeah, whatever.
That part you will. Yeah, that you part. Know. That's what. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. All right, guys, we will see you next week. Bye bye.
Bye.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.